Welcome back to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated with the metals. I'm Tori, alongside Miles and Rob, and together we have over 75 years of experience advising on and brokering the precious metals. And each week, the three of us strive to provide you a technical analysis of the metals charts, as well as cover those underlying fundamentals and the news that helps move and predict these markets. Let's start with a brief weekly recap as we record on Wednesday, August 20th.
Kicking it off with gold. Gold is down ever so slightly, about 0.5%, currently sitting at $3,348. So a slight decline in gold, but it remains in a trading range. Silver actually down a bit more, 1.75%, sitting at $37.90. Now, $37.90 sounds like a pretty high number, and that's because silver started last week at a pretty high number, as silver's been climbing pretty strong. So we are just looking at a little correction here, fairly deep correction short term that we'll look at, as silver's down marginally, but still sitting just shy of $40 an ounce. Platinum is about dead even over the last week, sitting at $1,337. It remains flat since it took that big decline right at the end of July, and we've sort of been treading water ever since then. And finally, in the metals, palladium continues its slow grind down after a pretty decent run up last month. It's down another 1.5%, currently sitting at $1,120. Quick glance at the paper markets. The S&P also down about 0.75%. Now, that's not the whole story over the last week. It's currently at 6,400, but on Friday, we did put in a new all-time high in the S&P as it climbs to the top of its ladder. And finally, the U.S. dollar. If everything else is down, I bet you can guess what the dollar is. It's up about 0.5%, so nothing to write home about, but the dollar is inching its way back towards the fabled 100 number, currently sitting at 98.25.
So platinum wins for the week by being flat, everything else down a little bit.
Correct.
But that's all off of today. I mean, we're up 2.5% in platinum today, so it's had just a last gasp to try to close our week anyway. And for those of you that are listening and not necessarily watching, we do put this show on YouTube as well. You'll get some visual assistance with the charts that Miles is discussing. And you can find that at McIlvaney.com/news. Miles, anything you want to dissect chart-wise that gives a little bit more insight for the listener?
Sure. There's a couple things we can glance at, but a little quote from Chris Vermeulen, who runs the Technical Traders. I like to keep an eye on him, as he's a pretty good chart analyst. So Chris yesterday pointing out the fact that everybody keeps asking about gold. It's gold, gold, gold. What's going on with gold? From his perspective, it's not too surprising because gold has been in this sideways trading range for a number of months now after a big run. So he's out there saying, hey guys, it's been sideways for months. It's barely putting in any moves. There's only so much you can cover when something isn't moving. So the bull flag remains. It is what it is until proven otherwise. And I certainly appreciate that approach. So there is only so much you can dive into. We did talk a fair bit about that bull flag last week, and we continue to trend that out sideways. The biggest thing there is once gold makes a decision, you can assume the breakout is going to be pretty aggressive. After you have a big move in a direction in any market, one of two things need to happen. Either you have a correction, which we're going to look at in another market here in a moment when we get to it, or you have sideways trading, both of which are going to take the foot off the gas a little bit and let the market kind of catch its breath and decide again where it's starting from. So the summer bull market, bull flag remains in effect for the gold market.
Well, everybody's asking what's going to happen to interest rates. I know they're meeting at Jackson Hole later this week. Tori, let's talk about the pros and cons. Either they drop interest rates or they remain the same.
Yeah, I think we will learn a lot Friday. So anybody listening to this on Thursday, it's a little early. Or if you're listening on Saturday, it's probably going to be one day old news. You know, we'll see what Chairman Powell has to say, whether he's hawkish and thinks that the rates need to stay high, or if he's dovish and thinks the rates could afford to come down. You know, it's over a 90% chance now the markets are pricing in this 90% chance of a 0.25% reduction in the Fed lending rate. That doesn't necessarily correlate directly to mortgage rates. That's more of an indicator from the 10-year Treasury yield than anything. But it really is a tightrope that they have to walk. Let's talk about some of the justifications for it. And the reason we want to talk about this is because it does impact the gold price. That's dollar policy. That's monetary policy.
Yeah.
So as the dollar is impacted, well, the gold price is impacted as well. So if we're going to break out of that wedge pattern that Miles is describing, it's going to have a lot to do with what they decide to do at the September 17th FOMC meeting, not the Jackson Hole meeting.
Yeah, because they won't make a policy decision in Jackson Hole.
That's right.
But they'll give an indicator of which direction they're going.
Exactly. So some reasons for, there's a lot of screaming for rate cuts. Well, from a Main Street standpoint or, you know, citizen standpoint, yeah, we'd like to see housing get a little bit more affordable.
Or mortgage rates, yeah.
Yeah, mortgage rates drop. Same with any loans. So you have cheaper borrowing costs.
Yeah.
But there's labor market weakness, which obviously points to the fact that we need to stimulate the jobs market. And one of the best ways to do that is lower borrowing costs, because that stimulates business growth. They can borrow to expand, but you can also count on the fact that cutting rates would strengthen market confidence. Miles pointed out that the S&P 500 was at an all-time high this week. Well, so was the NASDAQ, so was the Dow for the most part. The stock markets are at these all-time highs. And they would like to see that continue. That's certainly a market sentiment gauge, but not necessarily a direct correlation to economic health. It would reduce our debt service. Rob, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit later in the show, just talking about how key it is for our government debt service to be kind of refinanced, if you will, at lower interest rates. We need rates to come down so we're paying off the debt at lower percentages.
I know Morgan Lewis indicated on our Tuesday staff meeting that they need to get the yield on the Treasury, I think he was talking about the five-year Treasury, down around 3%, 3.1%, which currently I think we're at about 3.8%. So that interest rate affects that $37 trillion debt that we have to service. And don't forget, that has to be refinanced over the next 5-6 years. The entire amount.
That's
because of the short-term nature of that Treasury debt. And we will be doing a deep dive into what the options are for the government going forward.
Well, and that's part of what President Trump has been saying about too late Powell. You know, Jerome Powell is like, look, we've got to save money now.
Yeah.
And we'll get a little bit deeper into that. But some people are saying, look, a justification is that inflation is low enough right now. It's not at its target. They want 2% inflation. We're at 2.7%. Now with CPI, arguably it's higher than that, but they're saying, look, it's low enough. It's time to cut rates. Inflation's in check. And what it'll also do is move money out of conservative savings into investments, because if those rates drop and you're getting less of a return by getting a CD or buying a short-term treasury, well, you're going to go seek yield somewhere else. And that stimulates investments, which stimulates tax revenue, which stimulates obviously a better balance to our budget. So there's a trickle-down effect there. And then it stimulates the stock market, which we've already seen since they started cutting rates last year, and it strengthens the bond market. So those are a lot of arguments for the rate cuts, and that makes sense.
Yeah. But then you look at the reasons against, you know, inflation picking back up.
Which is a big one. Inflation is picking back up.
Well,
right
it is.
Now. Yeah.
I mean, that's going to happen
already.
Regardless. Yeah.
Already. PPI this week is 3.3% for July. That's not good. When 2.5% was expected, the inflation numbers are not good. And 0.9% for the month of July, when 0.2% was expected. So it's not a small inflation reversal. And Hedgeye feels like it's going to continue for 4 straight months.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an argument against the rate cut, because you'll just pour gas on the fire.
Yeah. And people that are saying we don't need a rate cut is because the economy is already strengthening. And I think there's some debate on that, but would it drive housing and car prices higher? We'll see. Will it increase the money supply through credit? Of course it will. And the reason against it is because we are not in a recession. You know, let's save our ammunition for when we are. Okay,
I get
arrows
that. Arrows stay in the quiver.
Yep. It'll lower the return on investments. Okay. and personal debt is already too high and money supply is already at an all-time high. So, you know, those are good reasons against not having a rate cut.
Yeah, and that money supply is a huge one because that's really what inflation is. Like, they want us to think that inflation is the cost of goods climbing, right? No.
No.
It's the swelling of the money supply.
And the velocity of that money going through the economy. But see, that's what this government wants to change. They want to increase velocity, which is really going to amp up inflation.
It will. And the velocity picks up when interest rates drop. You start driving credit markets, you start driving borrowing, and that's part of the issue. Even if they're directing certain sectors with some government loans and assistance, every time the government meddles in a market sector, what does it do?
It always screws it up.
It inflates it,
but
right?
But that's where we're going. Okay. Are you ready for me to dive into this?
Go,
or you
buddy.
Want to keep going? Okay. So the problem is the debt. And we know this. And the fact is that it has to be refinanced, all of it, within the next 5-6 years. Okay. So what the government is trying to do is a U.S. debt for U.S. equity swap. That's the direction that this government wants to go. The imperative is to retain the capital that is already here in the United States. If foreign capital continues to exit the U.S. bond market in large quantities, the immediate priority becomes preventing that outflow. So in a normal functioning market, they would raise interest rates to keep the money here. But no one is really willing to lend us money under the current terms. So financially, we either borrow less and tighten our belts, okay?
Yeah.
Or we monetize the debt and debase the currency.
Which is all we've done for decades.
You know, it's been kicking the can down the road. So restating the problem, we either retain the money already in U.S. treasuries from exiting, or we attract more new capital into the U.S. via foreign direct investment or U.S. treasuries. Now, stablecoins have been presented as a mechanism allowing treasuries to be treated as collateral rather than sold outright. So it would turn a treasury into a debit card. That's what a stablecoin is. This process transformed government bonds into a form of money, and it slows the exodus of funds from the U.S. financial system. But this is where foreign direct investment becomes critical. And I'm going to quote Jameson Greer. He's the U.S. trade representative. He's saying, listen, reversing decades of harmful policy that weakened our manufacturing capacity and workforce will take time and a coordinated effort across the public and private sectors. Key phrasing. But keeping the status quo would only accelerate the dangerous trajectory of deindustrialization, and we require a generational project to reindustrialize America, and time is short. So this is coming from the White House.
Yeah, this the U.S. Trade Representative. You're right. That's clearly stating agenda.
Clearly. So what does that look like? People were focused on, are they going to raise or lower interest rates? What's going to happen to the price of gold? But let me tell you where we're going. Foreign direct investment differs from traditional investment because it commits capital for years at a time, locking it into productive assets. It resembles a partnership or an anchor investment that provides security to the host economy by offering favorable terms. Like if you are a state and you want to attract a sports team or a manufacturing entity into your state, what do? You offer favorable terms. So we have to entice foreign investors to commit capital despite concerns about safety or confiscation. In 2022, you know, we froze Russian assets
right,
because of what they did in Ukraine, which I'm not going to argue whether that was good or bad, but it changed the world's perception of investment in U.S. treasuries.
Yeah, because of the control factor, right?
Exactly.
They needed to diversify away from the dollar and U.S. debt.
And they have been for the last 3 years.
Not just them.
No.
The BRICS nations in general.
That's where I was going with that.
Yeah. An eye-opening occurrence for most of the world.
So the key word is advantageous. So if we can keep that capital And capital is the key. Retention of capital is the key. This is what this administration is focusing on. From leaving the U.S. Treasury market, which used to be seen as a safe haven, but no longer is, for a lot of different reasons, okay? We are not in a strong position. We are trying to reattract money from leaving. So we decide on where the investor money goes. To make this more palatable, this government puts our own skin in the game. We present it to the rest of the world by nationalizing businesses in a corporatist mindset. It's a move towards state-controlled capitalism, very much like China.
I was just going to say, that doesn't sound American to me.
No, it is not.
That's not free market, but
and it may
like
work.
The university setting.
It may work, and it may be necessary, but we already know what happens when governments get involved. But it's exactly what it is. There's nothing free market or democratic about it. So the U.S. dollar is no longer the safest place on the block. Gold is. The U.S. will now market itself as an opportunity to own a slice of America's resurgence, okay. And they already are. The U.S. is offering the world a debt for equity swap to remain in business. So the U.S. is no longer offering safety. We are offering a deal. That's where we're going.
That's fascinating to hear. And honestly, you're opening my eyes to this as you speak, because I keep hearing of these deals where instead of tariffs, you can pay to avoid tariffs, in a sense. So you can pump money into the United States.
Build our factories. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Bring your manufacturing back to the U.S., which everybody wants, whether it's pharmaceuticals or computer chips or automobile manufacturing, all of the above. So this is a direction that, of course, we all want to see, but what is that going to do? And that's why the U.S. dollar, if you're sitting on a lot of capital in U.S. dollars, you really need to consider owning something like gold that is not somebody else's debt or obligation.
Well, and I think the quote you had that discussed the generational aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think is key, because you know that there are policies in here for this very reason. I think a lot of people don't understand what's the reasoning behind the president putting significant tariffs. And I think you literally just went through the explanation there. So I appreciate that.
Well, and I am getting this information from a subscription service that I have paid for. This is coming from Goldfix, and these guys are good. They're up there with Chris Vermeulen. And Hedge your guys eye. At HedgeEye.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what we do. We try to take information from different sources and put it into the minds and ears and eyes of our listeners so you guys can see where we're going. This is where we're going.
Which means the macro viewpoint,
yeah,
which is always the way to approach gold, is only encouraging. Well, it's discouraging, which means it's encouraging for the gold owner, buyer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because that is your insurance or your hedge against that type of direction. Now, I'm all for the reindustrialization of the United States. I'm personally not comfortable with the statism aspect of it. And they just did this with rare earth minerals, $150 million loan this week in order to streamline the processing of separating out these rare earth minerals. And to me, that has a lot to do with kind of the Ukraine talks and that sort of stuff and looking for sources for rare earth. But they're going to drive capital inflows into certain market sectors as those sectors return the favor. There's a pay-to-play type of thing going on here, is there not? And again, we're talking about the expansion of the money supply. If you look at the chart of the M2 money supply, that looks like the gold chart. It looks like the S&P 500 chart over the last 50 years. You know, we talked about this being the 54th anniversary of Nixon closing the gold window this past week. Look at all the charts since then. M2 money supply, inflation, GDP, gold price, the S&P 500 price, they're all on this similar trajectory. So the more you create, the more you stimulate, the more you stimulate, the more you depreciate the dollar.
The dollar.
And the more you appreciate the price of gold.
Well, it goes back to the basics. We have three ways out of this. We can inflate, just print the debt away.
Which again, we've done for decades.
We have. or we can tighten our belts, which I love the administration in so many ways, but they are not showing that at all. They are not showing a belt tightening. They are explaining to the American people, we're going to grow our way out of this, and we're going to keep the capital in the United States by having it reinvested out of treasuries, maybe into stable coin, but we're going to have that money invested into the infrastructure, which everybody's applauding, but there's the other side of it.
Well, and there's also a concern on my end where when the government starts acting like a business, it becomes the biggest business immediately. And if the government is acting like a business, who's responsible for filing the antitrust lawsuits or anti-monopoly lawsuits when they get to pick and choose which businesses survive and which don't?
Well, that's the key.
Yeah. And that ends up being my concern.
Yeah. And justifiably so. And Rob, to your point, like, let's look at President Trump's first term. We had huge GDP numbers. Everybody got excited about the second quarter of 2025 when the GDP came out at 3% because it was so much better than the first quarter of 2025. But that's low. In his first term in 2017, it was 4.3, and then it went all the way to 5.3 in the second year. That's the type of trajectory of growth that we need to see now, and I think we will. Well, guess what? You know, at the same time, the deficit went up 14% in the first year. It went up 17% in the second year. So he's very stimulative, very spendy, very weak dollar policy, right?
Well, he said that.
He's saying it again now. Yeah. Like, that's not changing. And you could say, well, we had the best economy in American history.
Okay,
maybe we did, but it also set up, you know, this pre-inflationary type of bubble. Well, what else happened there? Obviously, the debt went up substantially, but so did gold. Gold went up 8.5%, 13.5%, 19.3% in three of his 4 years. Count on the same now in the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, at least our kids and grandkids will have jobs. Okay. I appreciate that.
Yes.
But if you have worked your whole life like you and I have, and we have assets to try to protect, how do you protect assets in a sliding dollar world? Okay.
You have to invest and outperform.
You have to. And gold is the only tried and true that you can count on to continue to offset the loss of purchasing power. It's like we talk about a gold annuity. People that have had all this time and accumulated gold over decades from us, they can convert that into just sending one or two or three coins in a month and sustaining a lifestyle regardless of what happens to the dollar. We know gold's going to stay in pace.
Well, I would tell the listener too, consider this. The next time you sell something, even if it's for a loan term, especially for a loan term, do it in ounces instead of dollars. Because if you say, okay, I'll sell my business to you for, you know, $33,500 or 10 ounces of gold, and you can pay me an ounce of gold a year for the next 10 years, that's way better than saying you can pay me $3,350 a year for the next 10 years. Watch what happens. It's that asset preservation.
Exactly.
Well, one of the ways that we can boost it too is through the white metals. And Miles, you didn't get very deep dive into silver, platinum, and palladium, and I don't know if you want to, but in terms of the performance of your portfolio, it doesn't have to just be the gold spot price. We can use silver, we can use platinum to boost our ounces in gold, and that's where you're getting a far more aggressive return, and that's something that the physical market offers that we're happy to walk our clients through as well. So give us a call on that, or go to our website at McIlvaney.com, and certainly we can help you with that discussion as well. So anything to follow up with, Miles, on the white metals?
Yeah, I'll toss this out real quick. I think, as I've mentioned for the last couple of weeks, silver's starting to do what gold already did. Mm-hmm. That's how it tends to work. Silver outperforms gold typically towards the end of a bull market, not the beginning. So until that really starts to happen, I think that's good news for all the metals in general, in that we're just getting started in this, even though it may feel like we're not. So yeah, silver big run up earlier this year, outperforming gold for the first time in a while. I don't know if that's a trend that's certainly going to continue in the short term, but we all know that it absolutely will, at least at some point. whether it's 6 months or 6 years from now, it doesn't really matter to me. And seeing it start to flatten out here, possibly flatten out here like gold has, but man, silver's still climbing. You know, we had a down week this week, but that's amidst a pretty clear rising trend in silver. The one down thing, I did mention this at the very beginning of the show, the one thing we have actually seen is platinum took a really nice deep corrective dive here, and it's now on a bit of a bounce. So platinum coming all the way down to a very, very deep Fibonacci retracement, the 786. So that's 78% of the rise came back down from, and it bounced that level very cleanly. So platinum, I'm going to be keeping an eye on here over the next week to see if it reacts, putting in possibly a series of higher highs, and it may just go back up to retest. So, fellas, I think that's going to do it this week for Golden Rule Radio. We always appreciate you joining us. If you liked what you heard, we encourage you to swing on by our website. You can find us at mcalvany.com. That's mcalvany.com. You can also find us on Twitter at ICA Gold and Facebook at McIlvany Financial. And if you'd like to discuss your personal portfolio, give one of us a call at 1-800-525-9556. Hope you have a great week.